Our summit bid was in doubt until the moment we set foot on it. Leading up to and after our climb, foreboding cumulonimbus clouds sailed around Shasta, strafing the surrounding landscape with lightning. I also almost lost the mental battle against pain from my blisters and fatigue. We arrived on a Friday evening to Northgate Trailhead. The drive-in was particularly sporty because Google routed us along an unfrequented fire road that seemed like it was gradually being reclaimed by vegetation. My climbing partner Nick was waiting for us in his Subaru. After greetings, we made carne asada burritos and sipped beers in the parking lot.
Uh-huh. Essentially the summit, you've got the huge rock band, and then you want to start coming like diagonally across, and you see
in the windows between cloud cover, we snatched binocular assisted glimpses of our route to check the conditions. Even with our magnified vision, we couldn't really tell how the snow looked. We brought our ski touring setups, but riding through giant sun cups is no fun. We ultimately decided to risk it and pack the skis. Looking back on it now, I regret ever suggesting that we try a ski descent of Shasta. By this last weekend of June, the snowline had receded far above the trailhead. The first continuous snow turned out to be 3 miles in and 1,000 or so feet higher than our starting point. Carrying ski equipment on top of my mountaineering loadout made my pack weigh something on the order of 60 or 70 pounds. It added a lot of pain for very little upside. Day one started with a pleasant trek through the trees. Though we were heavily loaded and sweating profusely, our skis catching overhanging branches as we moved. We found the first worthy snow somewhere around 8,000 feet and switched to our touring setups. It was such a relief to have the skis on the ground instead of catching on trees and burdening my back. At last, I thought, the fun part begins. But it didn't last. We got to the scrubby brush and found only rocks. We both agreed that trekking more with the skis loaded on our packs just sucked. So we ditched the ski gear under a bush and continued on foot. We settled in for the evening at our perch on the boulder field below the moraine next to Hotlum Glacier, cooking food, napping, and watching the weather. I managed to rig up a kind of gauze cast around my ankle in an attempt to pin the moleskin over my increasingly raw heels. We decided to set our alarms for midnight and attempted to go to sleep around 7 p.m. I woke to bright flashes in my tent around 11 p.m. Nick managed to get a sight with a radar projection, which showed that the system producing the lightning was 50 or so miles to the north. But damn did it feel closer in the dark. The radar predicted it would blow north and dissipate. This ended up being the case, but we were jittery. I dozed for what felt like another minute before my phone alarm went off. We roused and made coffee and oatmeal in the red light of our headlamps. I wasn't sure exactly why we were using the red light, but Nick was doing it, so I followed suit. It made everything feel a little bit like a horror movie. Nick and I threw on our packs and started up the slope by about 12:30 a.m., stopping at the snow line to put on 12-point crampons. Then, we trudged. Hours in the dark went by. We both retreated into our thoughts, only speaking to point out hazards or clarify the route. Nick followed Gaia GPS on his phone, because we couldn't see anything beyond 100 feet away. Our line became very steep. Best I could tell, the slope angle tipped up to and possibly over 40 degrees. Footing lost here would probably have fatal consequence. Around 4 a.m., we crossed from a snowfield over a rocky ridge and onto the ramp of the Hotlum Bolam route. From here, the ramp took us straight up to a pyramid-shaped snowfield below the summit block. I took the lead, feeling okay at altitude. After a few switchbacks, I found the boot pack from other climbers, which went straight up to the Rabbit Ears rock towers. Nick didn't like the look of the near vertical path the boot pack took in front of us, so we cut right and ascended to the south summit.
South summit! Is that the true summit?
Yep.
Nice. Oh.
After a short traverse across the summit ridge, we dropped our packs and stood on Shasta's highest point. It was about 6:30 a.m.
Damn, that's a view.
My feet were in bad shape. I tore off my complicated yet failing gauze bandages and opted for simple band-aids. We descended after about 20 minutes on the summit. Nick raced down in front of me. We were about equal on the climb, but he was significantly faster on the descent. I felt at points like I was jogging down the ramp in crampons. Ooh. 4,000 vertical feet later, we arrived back to our camp and gathered up our things.
I feel like they bailed. Oh, man, this place looks so different on the way down and in the daylight.
I was so fatigued that the repacking that should have taken me 15 minutes took more like 45. My legs cramped up each time I crouched to pick something up off of the ground. We got back down to about 8,700 feet, where we'd stashed our touring gear, but it took us some 15 to 20 minutes to find it again, and I wrenched my destroyed feet out of my Nepals and into the touring boots. No good.
Here we go.
My grand attempt to ski Shasta lasted about 10 minutes. I slid down the rotten snow and dropped both mountaineering boots along the way, not having been bothered to secure them correctly on my pack.
Fuck. Yo, I was gonna just head down here a little bit. Can I just meet you down trail?
When I ran out of snow, I stowed the skis on my backpack once more and jammed my raw feet back into the sweaty Nepals.
Oh, wasn't exactly like Cody Townsend.
Shouldering the 60-ish pound pack, I drew on all of my reserves to stomp back down to the car. I knew the forest down to the Northgate trailhead was gorgeous, but I couldn't appreciate it through the pain and fatigue. I became angry at the trail and its makers for creating such a rambling, non-direct route back to the cars. We walked for what felt like miles of winding path to lose only a few hundred feet of vert. When we got back to the cars, which I once more forgot to take video of, I unceremoniously dropped my pack in back of Nick's Subaru and hobbled to the passenger seat. We'd completed Shasta. From the standpoint of the physical toll it took on my body and the amount of willpower I had to summon for the finish, Shasta's Hotlam Bolam route was the hardest climb I think I've done to this point.